expect people, I hope you guys will tune in to Channel 27 and call in to, you know, add a line or two of sense to the probably the nonsense text. But I also think we really have to start mobilizing for real protests fast, and I think that, you know, simply waiting in hopes of an electoral activity is no good.
Compassion to understand what the residents are facing when they're getting this disinformation from the police department.
Oh, sure.
You know, have compassion for the residents. It's, I mean, they are being used in a very, very a very foul way by a political party called the Police Department of Santa Cruz.
Right. Well, I mean, I was talking to them at great length the other night, and I think what we really need to do is turn out information for homeless people that tells them, you know, people are going to be sleeping illegally. They're going to continue sleeping, 700 to 1,500 of them illegally, and they're going to be sleeping probably in these zones because people have been, you know, nudged into these zones,
well,
told
that
these are places to go.
That's what the press release that was sent to the San Francisco.
Sure, even though they're not, there's been no second reading, even though there's not likely to be any second
reading.
Apparently, I was kind of initially dismayed when I heard that, you know, that you and others had sort of abandoned this, and I think to some extent with good reason. I understand you had this, you know, blockade in the road, the incredible shrinking safe zones, you know.
The industrial zones shrink to a third of what we were originally
But I
given.
Think what we now need to do is hit the streets again and say, look, we have seen how all our patience and all our negotiating skills have produced, essentially, we need now to show them that there is a real determination. We'll set up our own campground right here at City Hall if we need to,
keep clear, though, the difference between the overnight survival sleeping and campgrounds, because there still will be the issue of campgrounds in the future, but we do need to secure the human rights for overnight survival sleeping. So, you know, when you do the campground kind of activities, try to distinguish it somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, please, Robert.
Okay.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye. And, of course, David is right about those distinctions, but, of course, they're pretty meaningless for two-thirds of the people for whom survival sleeping, even under the existing so-called partial sleeping ban repeal, which might come into force if we can ever get it back to city council, that particular law provides for people the opportunity to sleep on a patch of sidewalk in the two industrial zones if they don't get sued by, I guess there's a claim that there's a liability problem, and that's the latest delay and deny approach by the city on this whole issue. So, I mean, it seems to me that you can get lost in these details, you know. I mean, if you sit around worrying about the details, you get lost in them, and I think that to some extent is what the negotiators have gotten into. And David Silva, of course, is, you know, a negotiator par excellence. I mean, he salvaged a little bit of something from the debacle last year when Catherine Byers ruled after the whole task force to examine the camping ordinance dog and pony show went through 3 months, winter of 1998-99, he got them to eliminate a misdemeanor provision, he got them to make it lower the fine to $54. There, I mean, some small things, but the amount of energy expended to get these tiny things, I think, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's really, maybe it's important for us to stay on the main issue. Scott, is the problem that we're just not tidy enough as campers? What's the answer here?
Well, that's what everyone points to all the time. I mean, if there's any discussion, debate about a campground, there's any debate about, you know, where people could legally camp in their cars or anything like that, it's always the worst members of the homeless population are pointed out and said, see what they do, see how they act, you know, they've ruined this little patch of woods here, they've left garbage all over this street there, and the people that are actually taking care of themselves or taking care of their scene, no one even knows they've been around, so they can't point to them and say, oh, well, look at those guys, because no one sees them. So the only people they actually see or see evidence of are the slobs.
Of course, that's not strictly true, because often you also see evidence of people who are new, people who don't really know the ropes. They come into town, they sleep in their vehicle, they don't dump a lot of trash, but they get hassled.
Right.
You know, and it's not because of their bad campers, but because they're obvious campers, or they're, you know, or the police are doing rounds or whatever. And of course, there are some really grotesque cases of people who are losing their vehicles because of difficult circumstances. A woman out at the Homeless Garden Project. A man called to me from last week about how his vehicle was taken by police. There are also other circumstances involved, not just the sleeping ban. But the mentality here is, I think, an underlying prejudiced and bigoted one against people of a certain appearance, a certain lifestyle, a certain income level. I mean, you know, a certain. To claim that this catchphrase "homeless by choice," for instance, I regard as pretty bogus. It's true that during a period of time of our lives, some middle class people, you know, choose to do some traveling around. They go from hostel to hostel, and you know, they hit the streets. They do some camping, and usually that's for a limited period of time. But I'd say 90% of people who are homeless are there because of economic problems, because of other problems in their lives, and they prefer not to be. What's your sense on that?
Well, I'd say, you know, the percentage of people that are homeless by choice is very small when you consider the estimated homeless population here. I mean, it's probably it's well under 10% here in Santa Cruz, which I think has a really high level of homeless by choice people, but it's still under 10%. And I think that a majority of the people, just like you said, are either for economic reasons or medical reasons or other reasons, you know, whether it's alcohol addiction, drug addiction, you know, mental health issues. There's just endless number of issues that may create homelessness. And it's really society at large. We live in this disposable society, and people have become disposable. It's like, well, if this person isn't being a useful member of society, then we won't even take care of them, or we won't even care about bringing them back into the regular mainstream society. We'll just let go of them. They're disposable.
And moreover, even if they can take care of themselves, we'll lay barriers in their path, because the very idea that there are people like this in our neighborhoods makes us uncomfortable, so we just don't want to even have any sense that they're around at all.
Right, yeah, just a total chlorination of the sidewalks, I guess you could say.
Right, it's what Jerry Henry calls a kind of social cleansing.
Right.
Jerry Henry, of course, is the man who was on our show last week. He already went to his pretrial conference. He faces 10 years in jail for a series of essentially, he's a street minister to young people, but he also has worked with Feed the People, which serves poor people, young folks out at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. And when he challenged abusive behavior by police, he became targeted by authorities out there and now goes to trial on Monday morning at 9 a.m. in Department 2.
You're on free radio.
Hey, that's Scott Kennedy. You got in there?
Sorry?
Who you got in there?
Our guests are Scott Graham, Steve Argue, and, of course, the ever-popular Robert Norris.
Okay, well, I'd like to say hi to Steve.
Well, he's here. He hears you.
Yeah, hey, hi, Steve. Hey, listen, Robert.
Yes.
The reason I'm calling is because Scott just said that, you know, it's like we got a disposable society. Everybody's disposable.
Yes.
No. They're not disposing of them and thinking that they don't exist. They're locking them up.
Right, well,
it's not a disposable society. It's a police society.
Well, it's a little of this and a little of that. And I know that, you know, I read today in the paper that the Capitola trailer rent control was coming up for Capitola City Council. Is that tonight?
Yes.
Can you give us some sense of what's going on there? Are you going to that meeting?
No, but it's at 420 Capitola Avenue.
You know, there's so many things happening tonight, Merlin. There's something happening. I'm about to play a tape by Fred Geiger, who's a local activist, kind of an insider with SCAN, who talks about the Planning Commission hearing tonight here in the city. The city's Planning Commission is planning to now give power to set up new planning folks, planning inspectors who can go around and, police powers, in essence, to inspect.
Enforcement officers.
Code enforcement officers. Thank you, Scott. Actually, I'm going to ask Scott to talk about that. But do you have anything to say about the Capitola rent control situation?
Yeah, I was reading an article in the Sentinel today, and they were saying what the city of Capitola is afraid of is being sued by the lawyers who have been hired by the mobile home park owners that are against rent control.
Right.
And they said, they honestly, I guess, you know, they admitted it, or I can't quote anybody because I can't remember it that well, but they're afraid of being sued by the rich people.
Right.
You know, and that's like nowhere in my book. I remember hearing like a few years ago that they got $200,000 from the government or the state for affordable housing, and they didn't spend it on affordable housing.
No, I think that's frequently the case. Scott actually has probably a greater series of anecdotes around that one than you. either you or I do, because he's been following the redevelopment agency's peregrinations for a long time. Anything more you want to say before
we
I
really
roll?
Need, Capitola really needs people like David Silva and you, Robert, to help us out.
Well, I know you've got...
Control. We need you guys. You know, we're part of the community, too.
Sure, but of course you've got Gail going to the rent control meeting. Maybe
Gail,
what you could do is have her...
City Councilwoman.
Right, why don't you have her give us a call, Merlin? Give a call to the Huff line. That's what goes for anybody else out there who wants to... he doesn't want to call the air, the live air on air line, which is for those who do want to call, 427-3772. But the Huff line is easy to call. You can just leave a message of any length, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and just talk about what you know, either in confidence or talk about it for public dissemination or talk about it for broadcast. And I'll play it on my next show, which is on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning, goes till 1:30 in the afternoon. Although we do have two special guests coming on that show, they're going to take up a lot of time. George Cavallo, who's the psychiatric ombudsperson, he's going to be talking about this new crazy AB 1800 law, which is going to make it much easier to commit people. David Silva won't even have, he'll just have to light a match to do a cigarette or something, and away he goes. You know, I'm not sure what, it's going to be easy to commit people under these new, you know, help the mentally ill into the boxcars kind of thing. I know, they're doing it for their own good. Keep that in mind. And then also we're going to have on the show a special long-distance interview with Arnold Abbott. Arnold is a Fort Lauderdale minister who has been sued and arrested by the city for feeding the homeless. He's not a Food Not Bombs guy. He's just an ordinary person, a man of the cloth, who doesn't want people to be hungry, but they don't think that it makes for good tourism, so they want to get rid of him. He said, no thanks, and we're going to have him talking on the show on Sunday.
Hey,
but
Robert.
Yeah.
You know that guy Jerry you were talking about earlier?
Jerry Henry. Yeah, he's going to go to trial on Monday.
I was in jail with him.
What did you were in jail with him? What did you think of him?
I thought he was a very intelligent man.
Jerry is a very, I think, well-spoken person. He's also disabled in the sense that he put him under pressure and he gets suddenly not manic or anything. He just gets this kind of can't sleep at night, can't think, but it doesn't manifest itself in any outward way.
I get like that myself, man.
Well, that's the reason we don't want your kind around here, Merlin.
Dog.
Yes.
Well, I'm trying to take the steps and doing the right thing to get a television show promoting local bands on Channel 27.
Do it, and don't forget to tune in on Channel 27, I think it is, to David Silva debating Mayor Sleeping Ban is My Passion Sugar, the guy who wants to keep the sleeping ban, apparently, or at least isn't doing shit to move it off dead center at the moment. I suppose we have to blame Byers because she's the fourth vote, or Rotkin because he's the fourth vote, but... You know, Sugar could also come out publicly and talk about this situation.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth, man. I got nothing against Mike Rotkin, but it makes me wonder why, you know, he's been mayor like four times, right?
He's a four-time winner, but he's really, I mean, and we're the four-time losers.
I know what I mean. You know, I remember when he was mayor, I don't know which time, but I thought he was a pretty cool mayor, and now that he's a city council member, my whole point is, Robert.
I would say he was a pretty cold mayor. Go ahead.
Why is he still doing it?
This is it. This is his last 3 months. I'm gonna hang up on you now because there are thousands of callers waiting to call in.
No, I'm just kidding, man.
Okay, guy. Anything else you
want to
talk about?
Yeah, I want to show simulcast my TV show by 96.3. So plug me at the next meeting for that.
Well, I never go to those meetings, but if I did, who knows? I might say.
Yeah, I wonder why. No, I know why.
I hate meetings, man. I'll talk to you later. I'm out of here.
Well, don't turn your show into one.
All right.
Boy, that cuts me to the quick. This show, a meeting? I doubt it. It's me. It's a monologue. So, Scott, coming up shortly, I thought we'd play a little bit of... Fred Geiger and I had a long interview before the show started about the upcoming Planning Commission, which is happening in about 20 minutes downtown at City Hall. You want to tell us something, though, kind of... What can people expect if they go down to City Hall? I mean, this is a Thursday. Why should we bother to go to City Hall on a Thursday? What's that about?
Well, what's going on tonight is that the Planning Commission, I believe they're supposed to be in joint session with the City Council. Now, that's what it says on their agenda.
Whether I said no.
Oh, they're not going to do that. Okay. But that's what was planned anyway. But what they're going to be discussing is this new code enforcement section of the civil code that they're going to enact here in town. It'll be a Section 4, and they're going to create this whole new thing. And this is actually was done on direction of the old council. This was something Scott Kennedy and Mike Rockin pushed through. I mean, it actually wasn't enacted, but the idea, you know, put staff, allocate staff time and money to actually do all this stuff was done by the last council nearly 2 years ago now. And what it will be is they'll be enacting all this stuff to allow these new code enforcement officers to go around, and if they see a violation out there, then they can just enter your property without a complaint, without any formal notice to the owner, and inspect for code violations. I mean, this could be something like a cracked window on the front of your house. They see a cracked window, and they come by 3 days later, which you're supposed to fix windows in 3 days, or if you're renting a house, your landlord is supposed to fix it. And if that's not fixed, that'll give them grounds to come onto your property and inspect for other code violations, because if there's an obvious one, then that must mean there's more. And the problem with this is that there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people living in garages and old chicken coops and other outbuildings behind houses around town. This law will give these code enforcement officers the authority to go inspect those and red tag or yellow tag them as they see fit. The one thing is the Planning Commission, the last time this was on the Planning Commission agenda a few months back, instructed the planning director and her staff before they would consider anything like this to come back with a workable way of giving amnesty to already existing granny units or garage conversions. And instead of doing that, they're just coming forward once again with this plan of this heightened form of code enforcement. And it's sort of like, you know, a 1984 Big Brother type thing, where they're just going to go around town, and if they figure, oh, there's some people living in a garage here, we'll kick the door down on the garage and see if they're in there. These people will also have arrest powers. They'll be able to arrest people for code violations. Now, it just seems ridiculous.
Is this also, I stepped out of the studio for a moment, Scott. Did you mention that this would give an inspector the power, now which you can only get through a complaint, if he or she sees something like a
cracked window.
A cracked window, did you mention that already?
Yeah, right.
And would this have an impact on the Dolphin and the Lee situation? Not so much the Dolphin, where they have the information about who's in what apartments and how many people there are for their little, what I regard as bogus relocation plan, or replacement plan, and then the relocation plan. But for the Lee, where they're being refused access to the apartments, so they can't get that information out, so they can't make the funding requests and get that funding in place and get the machine ready to roll for eminent domain if the Lee won't sell.
Right. Well, it could. I mean, they could come in, they could bring in their building inspectors, and while the building inspectors are there, they could have Veronica Duran follow them around. You know, she could follow them around and take notes as to how many people she feels is living in each unit, even though they may not be home at the time.
And I'd like to point out, I don't know if I said this before, I don't think I did, that there was a meeting planned tonight. It was a regular Relocation Advisory Committee meeting. Perhaps I have said this, but if I have, I'm not sure if I have or not. And that meeting was one at which Hernandez and Fitzmaurice were supposed to report back to the tenants on what the city council had to say about the guarantees they wanted. Of course, what the council had to say was nothing. They made no offer for any kind of guarantees. They postponed the issue for 2 weeks. But
the only one that actually really spoke to the guarantees was Rockin, and he said, well, these are all guaranteed by state law anyway.
And I think Sugar then replied, in, I think, an obvious retort, and a good one that I've used in response to this, and so is Phil Baer. Well, if they're guaranteed by law, then why don't you just pass a law and say that's the situation? It would just be, it might be cumulative, but it would be no problem.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing, is that there is no real argument for not passing these guarantees. It's just a smokescreen.
You're on free radio.
Hey, Robert, I want to make it short and quick.
Real short. Yes. No, I don't. Who wants a sheriff? Ah, okay.
I think that's like 1984 to be good, and then I think that's making the kids who are like vulnerable to thinking of, gee, what's right, what's wrong, and brainwashing them into thinking cops are good. And, I'm not saying cops are bad, but
right. Well, I agree with you, but you're a little bit off the topic we're on.
I
right
know
now.
You guys are always talking about the city council members.
Yeah, well, we're trying to really kind of dovetail with the Dolphin Lee situation, where the 200 to 300 Hispanic people are threatened with eviction, and it's also coming up tonight, where they're going to have some new exciting code enforcement officers will be able to come into your house and arrest you.
Capitola City Council meeting.
Right. Well,
stuff going on here tonight too.
That's true. You know. On the other hand, we live in Santa Cruz, not Capitola. Not that we shouldn't have some interest in that.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Well,
I live right next to the freeway in Santa Cruz. I live down across from Denny's.
Why don't you drop in the city council meeting in Capitola?
I don't mind. I think it's a good idea, but I think that, I get overwhelmed with stuff in Santa Cruz is what really happens. But I think that if you, because I know you're very interested in the subject, walk down to Capitola City Council meeting, you could give us a report. What do you think?
I'll have Gail give you a report.
Or he could call Ed Davidson and have Ed Davidson go to the meeting.
Right. Ed Davidson's another bet. Look him up in the phone book under Davidson. Ed Davidson. He really is quite a mind.
In Capitola?
200 Button Street.
He lives in Santa Cruz, but is interested in matters of redevelopment and rent control, things of that sort.
Yeah.
I got a roll on you,
okay,
man.
Okay, Ed Davidson. Okay, thanks, Robert.
Sure.
Boy, Ed and Merlin, I don't know what to say. So we are in the midst of Bathurst Beer's Broadsides. I'm talking to Scott Graham, the barefoot boy from City Council land, and Emma Gray, but he runs back and forth through the area in the no man's land. We have with us recent escapee, Steve Argue, at large at last from the jail where he's been cooling his heels for the last 8 months. Thank you very much. 7 months, 7 or 8 months. It seems like a long time anyway. And how long? 7 months?
Seven months.
But I would hate to be anywhere. 7 days is too much for me. 7 hours is enough to make me cringe. Steve is may well become a regular broadcaster here on Free Radio. I've been trying to talk Scott Graham into it too, because Scott, you have a wealth of information, and you also kind of can see through to, I think, certain basic important issues that underlie a lot of the garble and the gobbledygook, and hopefully we'll be bringing that tonight to the Planning Commission. Have you seen the agenda? Do you know what we should expect coming up on that agenda?
It's just this addition to the current building code, which they're calling item number four, section four of the building code, which will have all these powers that the code enforcement officers will have, but it'll also set up this system of sending people through this whole administrative sort of system, where if they find you in violation, they can make you come before this arbitrator, and you'll have like two different levels of that you have to go through before you can actually go to court.
So they're going to exhaust you, take up all your time if you're a working person with all these kinds of pre-judicial appeals, which you have no significant safeguards or fewer significant safeguards?
Well, one of the things when I was reading this thing last time was that one of the things was that if it was determined that the people weren't given due course, due process,
right,
in the course of their administrative hearing, that the administrative hearing officer could continue anyway.
This sounds. I think you folks out there, if you want to catch a little something on an off council night that may be more important than we're aware of, although I suspect this matter may want to be appealed to City Council if it passes at this level.
Well, what happens is the Planning Commission will make a recommendation, which they will then send to City Council. Hopefully, they can not even go that far tonight. They'll just tear the thing apart and have staff bring it back to them another time, because that's what they did last time it was in front of them. They picked it apart and didn't like it.
That was
it.
6 months ago?
Not quite 6 months, 4 or 5 months ago.
I know I heard from Roxana Kistapache about this, another Beach Flats activist who's still concerned about dolphin lay issues very seriously, and herself was very upset when David Silva was dragged out of city council two nights ago by the police to be dumped into the psych ward. Again, reminding folks at 7:30, Voices from the Village will be coming on with David Silva confronting Mayor Keith Sugar, and I guess some Harvey West spokesperson about whether it's a human right to be able to sleep somewhere at night.
And that may be on channel 25, 26, or 27.
Ah, so we, for those of you who have three televisions, keep watching all three, or you, if you have those televisions, give you a little corner where you can see one channel while you look at the rest, invite me over, I'll start looking at movies. You want to call in, we have a phone number here, 427-3772. Scott and I are soon going to make an escape to the Planning Commission in order to keep an eye on what's going on and can provide some support, maybe even make a few notes and take a few words down on audio tape. With us will be the exhausted Steve Argue, who's going to have some of his own comments about what's going on. I've also left him with a tape by Fred Geiger, as I said, who is a planning... He's a Transportation Commission member who also has a strong interest in this issue and talks about it, as well as about the Dolphin Lee and the city council around that. I think that the Dolphin Lee issue, much as our last caller, Merlin, may get bored with it, and I understand, because I get bored with it too. It seems to go on and on. And why aren't we doing something around the sleeping ban, and where's the Tent City 2000 that we've been talking about, and why aren't we organizing and being as attentive to the needs of homeless people and the needs of residents who, as Silva mentioned, are being abused by police here, apparently, and residents are being pitted against homeless residents, housed residents being pitted against homeless residents. And then, of course, in these situations, the police get more power because they have more function. I suppose that's silly but true. Still, it's an important issue to cover. And the fact that this relocation advisory committee meeting tonight was abruptly canceled, I find very significant. It was canceled because the tenants control the meeting, and I don't think the staff now wants this stuff to go back to the tenants, because what the tenants can do is they can direct the council members who are on that committee to go back to city council and get answers to hard questions, which then have to be discussed. And that really is the key, because the one thing this council has not been doing, almost without exception, is discuss substantive issues. Would you agree with that, Scott?
Right. Tuesday's meeting was the first time in redevelopment session that they actually had any kind of real debate about Dolphin Lee whatsoever. They've never really discussed it. It's all been, well, we'll do this, yes, bam, it's over. They didn't discuss it. They just said they were going to do it. Staff's recommendation, fine. This is what Mercy wants? Oh, sure. We'll bend over backwards for Mercy.
Right, grease up and lean over for Mercy. Mercy, I should say. But, there are a couple things that did come out. One thing that came out was, they're throwing around these hoary old myths about, oh, well, we already voted guarantees, and we've had guarantees for a long time, and guarantees are provided by law. And nobody, even Sugar, has not been challenging that. He's just been saying things like, well, if they're provided by law, then there's no problem voting them again.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's not really elucidating the issue, which is, no, there aren't. Let's look at the specific laws. Let's look at the specific funding sources. What about immigration status? What about credit history? These are issues, of course, that SCAN will be grappling with at their forum in a couple of weeks, next month, I should say, and that forum will be planned tomorrow to some extent, discussed with Residentes Unidos, and I invite people to come down at 7 o'clock tomorrow to 124 Lee Brandt Street, which is where this is going to be happening. Members of the community are invited. I think probably with the exception of Tim Fitzmaurice, everybody in town is invited. But council has been given a particular the cold shoulder by the Residentes Unidos because of essentially duplicitous behavior that it seems to be intended to ram a plan through the tenants regardless of its impact on them. And since these people's homes are at stake, they're rather sensitive on that subject.
Right. And they think that they just feel like they've been treated like idiot children. You know, they're not being treated as an equal adult to the other adults in this process. They're being treated, I don't know if it's because of the language barrier or the economic stratus or whatever, but they're being treated like they're a bunch of idiots. And they're not a bunch of idiots. They're a bunch of intelligent, smart, caring people with big hearts.
And pretty hardworking people, too. Is what I've noticed.
Right, yeah. I mean, they're very hard-working people. They're industrious. They're all... every apartment that I've seen down there has been very well kept. The people themselves are well kept. Their children are usually very clean.
We
their
shouldn't have to
children's
be saying
clothes
this.
Are clean.
This is ridiculous.
But well, it is. It is. These are things that they're saying about these people.
I mean, what if I would say Scott is very well kept? He's industrious. No, he's a fucking slob. You know? But the fact is, he doesn't deserve to have his house grabbed from under him. He doesn't deserve to be treated like, you know, some sort of second grader and herded down the road. I mean, no. And nor do you, nor would anyone out there be wanted to be treated that way. Anyway, I think we probably got to roll pretty quickly because if we want to get to this meeting and influence the course of events, and I think that's important to do, much as I hate these meetings. I remind you that next Sunday from 11 to 1:30 we'll have a special guest, George Cavallo, ombudsperson and patient advocate. If they do what they did to David Silva and lock you up on the net word and you're not as swift-tongued and collected and cool as he is, and they decide to hold you and dope your ass up with all kinds of psychotropic drugs, Corvello is the guy who you call to go to bat for you to stop them from forcibly medicating you. And he's going to be in the studio 11:30 to 12:30 talking about AB 1800, which is, again, the Needles on Wheels program, which will allow for the courts to send people to your houses to make you take your meds. I kid you not. Also, we'll be having, as I said, an interview with Arnold Abbott. We'll be looking more further into the Dolphin Lee. I'm now going to leave you in the show in the capable but tired hands of Steve Argue, who he'll be taking calls as much as he wants, but I'm going to also leave him several tapes. One will be Fred Geiger talking about this planning commission that I encourage you also to consider going to if you're not listening.
Especially if you live in a converted garage or some other quasi-legal
Kiss
structure.
Your house goodbye, buddy, if this one goes forward. And it could be at any time of the day or night, man. You never know when these code inspectors are going to show up with their powers, right?
The red tags and their yellow tags.
Right, and the red tag code inspector. It sounds like some kind of weird bird, and it probably is. So I'm going to leave this in the hands of Steve Argue, and I'm going to hope that if anybody has any questions for me, your host Robert Norse, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We need to mobilize for protest around sleeping ban repeal. It is obviously stalled. David Silva has done the best he can, gotten them to say they're going to try to put it on the ballot. But I tell you frankly, unless you have tens of thousands of dollars, you're not going to win any such election. And I can't convince David of that, but I mean, I'm convinced of that. I think we need to do it through pressure on the city council, through mass protest. And I think we are in a position to begin doing that because everybody is now quite aware that all kinds of generous, honest, sincere, long-suffering initiatives are going nowhere because we have people at the center who are either afraid to do something or who just decided they don't care enough to do something. And that is a really sad situation that has to be changed by public pressure. Steve, have a seat here if you want and try to take over the situation. Maybe I'll just begin with this tape. Or I'm getting the axe signal here. Steve, have a seat. And yeah, you take your own time. You know how to run this thing, right?
Yeah.
And Steve here is going to talk to you. And I want to thank you for being with us and say goodbye to this last caller. Hi, you're on free radio.
Hey, Steve, news of talk. Let's hear some music, brother.
Here's Mr. Merlin. I would say, here's the
Merlin. Come on, play us Uncle Merlin. Please.
Okay, Merlin, you're on the air.
Let's hear one song, bro. One song. We need it now.
One song.
One song. Any song. You pick one.
You want a song on. Well, actually, that's not what I have planned right now. When I do my show, when I get back to doing my show, I did a regular show before I went into jail and
yeah, I know you're talking to Merlin.
Right, and then I'm talking to the air, and
on the internet too now, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, it's on the air and the internet.
Yeah.
And but right now what I have planned is not a song. I don't have songs prepared. I'm gonna get to my storage locker and get
some music
that there's actually I want some songs I want to play and I want to dedicate to some of the inmates I was in jail with.
Yeah, I did that too when I get out, man.
And let's see what's going on with this phone here.
I'm gonna hang up, buddy.
Okay, I'm just seeing it's not modulating as much as I'd expect it to where it's at. Okay, I'll see you later. Talk to you later. Merlin.
Okay, Steve Argue again, sitting in on Robert Norse's show. I agreed to do this, and I didn't realize exactly how exhausted I would be, but earlier, talking about the situation with David Silva, and the fact that you know, we can't tolerate this kind of treatment of activists. And I'm going to play a tape we have here of Fred Geiger that Robert Norse talked about. Briefly, I also wanted to, since I promised I would say something about the situation with Gary Graham and protests coming up for Gary Graham, also known as Shaka Sankofa, who is up for execution next week, June 22nd. So I want to get that in, and I am pretty exhausted, so it's a good thing I'll be putting this tape on. Shaka Sankofa is an innocent African-American man on death row in Texas, and he's scheduled to be executed on June 22nd, the year 2000. He's wrongly convicted of the murder of a white man, Robert Lambert, a known drug dealer who was carrying $6,000. Even Lambert's widow, Loretta Lambert, publicly appealed to then-Governor Richards to spare Shaka's life, declaring her belief in his innocence. Like so many poor people in prison, Shaka was doomed from the first day of his trial. He had no proper counsel or funds to adequately defend himself. 12 years later, new lawyers took on his case. Four witnesses passed polygraph tests, testifying that Shaka was with them on the night of the murder. But this and other evidence have never seen the light of day, or in a court, anyway. And he was denied the right to appeal because of the infamous 30-day rule they have in Texas, which gives a prisoner only 30 days to file an appeal with new evidence. The death penalty is disproportionately handed down to black and Latino prisoners, and all death row inmates are poor. Texas is infamous for its killing spree. Under Governor George Bush alone, 127 people have been executed, with 20 more scheduled for the next few months. And we must stop the Texas killing machine. Don't stand on the sidelines. Help save the life of this innocent man. Come and demonstrate with us on Tuesday, June 20th at 5 p.m. at Powell and Market Streets in San Francisco. And for more information on that, you can call 415-821-6545. That's 415-821-6545. And I'm gonna leave you now. Actually, not leave you. I'll be here. People want to call in, want to comment on what's being said. We can do that as well. The number here is 427-FRSC or 427-3772. And here's Fred Geiger with some important news and information.
Brought these to the podium. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Robert. Well, as you know, the listeners probably know, the council meeting was regarding the Dolphin Lee housing project in the Beach Flats, which has run into a massive wall of opposition from both community activists and the residents of the two buildings to be affected, who have formed into a group called the Residentes Unidos, and have also started to become active in SCAN, and it's been very successful in our political efforts, mainly through the efforts of Nena Ruiz, who they elected as their president or representative, I'm not sure her title. But anyway, the council hearing was basically on whether or not to approve the project as proposed, or to make some changes and deletions as requested by the residents and by the general membership of SCAN at a meeting. And I compared this project, the Dolphin Lee, as it's called, to the original beach area plan. I call it Beach Plan 2, and said that the reason I was calling that was that the same mistakes in Beach Plan 1 were being made in this plan, which was basically a preconceived notion of exactly what should be done, a series of hearings where the public was allowed to participate but not really listened to. Nothing really changed according to public input, which I believe is the purpose of public input, is so that the government can listen to the public and do what the public, at least the public that's mostly affected, is interested in having done. And then I mentioned at the same time before the council that Beach Plan 3 was lurking right around the corner at a meeting this Thursday evening night. And the reason I call it Beach Plan 3 is, once again, there is a pre-structured package that is being pushed through by the city at this time, only on the planning level, which I think is also very threatening because of lack of public awareness and input at the early stages. And also I mentioned that it had the potential to displace even more people from their homes, particularly low-income people, because what the plan is on the top of it, and the Santa Cruz Metro doesn't seem to be able to see past in two different articles, it looks good, hire more code enforcement inspection. However, the problem is the planning department, by their own figures in 1986 or 7 when they were dealing with this, they estimated there was between 2 and 3,000 accessory dwelling units located in garages that were not approved by the city. And these inspectors that they're potentially going to hire under this Title IV would obviously be dealing with whatever they could find that was not up to code, and they would be stumbling upon these units on virtually every block in the city of Santa Cruz. And I personally think it's a great idea to bring these units up to code so that they're safe, so that the residents of the units can call the city if there's a dangerous or unhealthy condition and say, hey, you know, get on my landlord and fix this. Right now they can't do that because they would be thrown out of the units by the city because the units are illegally converted into dwelling units from garages. And so, well-intentioned as it may be, I think it's not going to do what needs to be done for the city. I don't think anybody wants to displace several thousand people from their affordable, non-government subsidized housing. At a prior Planning Commission meeting in March, the Planning Commission voted to instruct staff to come back with a grandfathering program for these units before they were asked to submit the additional inspectors.
And that would mean that units would be allowed which had previously existed, but no new units, or what?
Well, those are good questions. Those are really two separate matters. Right now, we're basically just talking about the existing units. Largely, the existing units are illegal because, one, they're too close to the property line, or two, they don't have covered parking. Often it was a covered parking that was required for the main house. They've actually changed some of the requirements for new accessory dwelling units, ADUs, to not include the need for covered parking, merely off-street parking. So that's one of the things that would have to be done in the new ordinance, is to not require covered parking for the main houses. I mean, you can drive around any well-off section of town and see the Range Rovers and the Jaguars parked on the driveway or in the street. You can't require people to use their covered parking, even though they have plenty of it. So that requirement is pretty nebulous. And the other thing that's really wrong with the situation is, if a unit is too close to the property line, the alleged reason for the city getting involved is because of the neighbors having problems with that. But these ADUs that have been existing for years too close to the property line are obviously not bothering the neighbors, because the neighbors would have already complained to the city and the city would have already dealt with these units. So the two rationales for not accepting these units too close to the property line and not having covered parking just don't hold up really well.
What's the actual impact of accessory dwelling units in your mind in Santa Cruz? Does it have a negative impact on the city's quality of life? Seems like it provides more housing, but it makes it, I guess, more crowded. What's your assessment?
Yeah, those are two good points. Also, obviously, it does make it a little more dense, although that's the council, and I think that the broad majority of the citizens' view is that we don't want to sprawl, we want to infill. And in my view, as long as parking is provided off-street for these units, you're not impacting the neighborhood negatively, and you know, everybody knows that Santa Cruz is just pricing lots of people that help make Santa Cruz what it is out of the market. So if these units are existing, they're not bothering anyone because they haven't been complained about, then let's get them legalized. Let's make sure that the city can come out and inspect them to make sure they're up to health and safety and electrical and plumbing codes. We'll get them on the tax roll, bring some more money in for the city. Everyone wins. But this proposal before the Planning Commission, as far as I know, is just to hire the inspectors and then we'll work out the details later. Well, how many people are going to be displaced while the details are being worked out? I think there needs to be guarantees that that's not going to happen. And we've been told by the Planning Department, well, that's not our intention, and we will have a big book of implementation rules and all this. But, I mean, why do we want to put something into law and then say, well, don't worry, we're not going to enforce it here, and we're going to try to work the details out later? I mean, that's just the cart before the horse, and I think the Planning Commission realized that, and that's why they told the staff to come back with the grandfathering proposal before they wanted to hire the inspector.
You know, I guess a question I'd have is how many complaints in the... And how many inspectors does the planning department or does the city currently have to deal with the situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. I don't think it's a major problem. Like I say, I mean, you know, people have pretty much accepted these, and I don't think there are a whole lot of complaints. And, and often the neighbors know the people living in these units. They don't want to throw them on the street. They know what the circumstances are.
Do you have any stats on how many?
I have no specific information, Robert. That would be a good thing for people to come to the meeting tonight, Thursday, 7:30 at the council chamber, and ask.
That's tonight on June 15th, right? And this will be at city council chambers at
7:30 p.m.
7:30. I guess, though, that if those stats presumably would be available through the planning department, or I mean,
I would hope that they have those kind of statistics available.
If they're asking for more investigators, will one think that they have to show they have too many complaints for too few investigators? Is there currently an investigator? How many do they have right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. What, you know, I think they're saying that the council in a previous year's budget message wanted to increase the code enforcement, and this is the planning department's response to that. Which may be reasonable, but like I say, they need to get the horse before the cart here, and so people aren't put out of their housing without the owners having that.
Right.
Make some legal.
Do we know how many inspectors there are currently?
I don't. I don't think there's a whole lot. I mean, it's a small number. I'm not even opposed to them hiring more, but I think that it needs to be done, like I say, once again, so the inspectors aren't out there busting these units, and the units have no chance of becoming grandfathered, or not until later, until the people have already been put out of there.
I remember hearing some months ago there was a second aspect to this whole thing where they were seeking also broader powers to allow for inspections based on cursory external problems with rental units. They don't, now, right now they need at least a complaint to go into a unit. And this bears, of course, on the Dolphin Lee situation where the whole process is, you know, we're glad the tenants have united and glad that they're standing up and making clear the guarantees they want that the city is still refusing to grant or even discuss in any significant way. But and what I think has really caused this, the city council to stop and have to deal with the situation, is that the lead tenants are refusing to provide information that is necessary for the city to proceed along its, express train path. And because they have to get to what's called a replacement housing plan together, which would show how many people are being displaced. And the Lee has said, we're not giving you any information on this stuff, so just hold it right there.
Real breakdown in trust. That's obviously, you know, what happens when the people don't feel like the city is listening to what their needs are and they're trying to push something on them.
Right, but of course, if there were a new provision that allowed for inspectors to come in and start looking over everything very closely just by observing something from the outside, this would allow inspectors to start looking at the nethermost units, or I say the units closest to the street, by noting a crack in the window or something, and then proceed through the entire complex eventually.
Yeah, you're right, Robert. Actually, the provision says that the inspectors have the right to come in based on a reasonable cause, which is a lower standard of proof than probable cause that we require of our law enforcement officers. So we would be having these people that are not really law enforcement officers being able to assume law enforcement officer powers even at a greater level. And there is some upset, I'm sure, amongst people on the Planning Commission about the civil rights issue.
So this is a new standard being proposed tonight?
As far as I know, that was what was in the March proposal, and I don't imagine they want to change it. Basically, they're looking at it. Also, another, there's one other stat that this is a non-judicial hearing officer that has judicial powers. So different people feel differently about that. I guess it's done in traffic court or something. The reason the Planning Commission is saying they need this is because it's too hard to have to go to court and...
too many troubling civil rights to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, okay, well, I can see that, you know, maybe it is hard to go to court, but then you could say the same thing about any issue where a person is accosted by their government and accused of something that might result in jail time or a fine. Well, I mean, we have a tradition of having certain protections from government abuse, and those seem to be getting very strained in this case.
I noticed last Tuesday you were concerned enough about this issue to go up to the podium and mention it in the Dolphin and Lee hearings, but you also were concerned that the City Council itself was going to be meeting with the Planning Commission, since that was on the agenda. Mayor Sugar turned to you and said, no, there's no such thing planned. You came back to me and said, well, do they write English, or are they writing some sort of mishmash, because it says Thursday evening, City Council and the Planning Commission in a joint hearing. What have you found out about that?
I guess it was just a bureaucratic snafu, Robert. Nobody on the council that I seems to leave their meeting at that time, although I did, actually the agenda cabinet was unlocked, and I brought the copy that was officially posted in and showed it to the city clerk and circled where it said Planning Commission / City Council. And I noted that none of the other...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, we had to interrupt that briefly.
Yeah, I don't think there's any bad faith. I think it's just a bureaucratic snafu, but it did alarm me and several of the commissioners when it was released late, and with this joint meeting thing, it looked like an attempt to push something through real quickly without adequate public notice, and I don't believe, and I certainly hope that isn't the case. I think it was just an honest mistake.
Mm-hmm. You kind of observed the proceedings yesterday for a considerable amount of time, I should say, on Tuesday. The Dolphin Lee hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Any general impressions? Anything you want to share with?
Well, I think it was disappointing for everyone on every side and on and off the council. I think that he felt like he had a compromise that would, work for everybody. He was trying to honor the residents' natural concern that they be actually given in writing what they've been promised at many meetings, and several of the councilmen said yes, they are guaranteed those in writing, and it looks like, okay, well, it's easier, you know, to make people feel better to put something in writing than it is just a promise, and they're not attorneys, they don't understand redevelopment law, neither do I. That didn't seem to float, which I thought was a pretty simple thing to ask for. That was also asked for by the 10 general meeting majority by a 2-1 margin. The people were worried about the city purchasing the property immediately, which may have been well motivated by the city, because there is a possibility of one or both of those buildings being bought by a new owner and the people perhaps being dislocated. However, the tenants were worried about the management being turned over immediately to Mercy Housing, which they oppose because I don't think they like the way they were treated during the process, and they blame Mercy Housing for part of that.
Plus, they don't like the way Mercy Housing treats people in other projects, is my understanding.
Could be based on that additionally. And so the compromise was suggested by myself and others that to protect the tenants from this sale, but also to reassure them that they weren't going to be immediately managed by Mercy Housing, that a lease option could be arranged by the city. And that was the only thing that came out of that long session, which I have to say people were trying to do something right on the council there, and suggestions from the public were trying to be helpful. They did instruct the redevelopment director to negotiate for a lease purchase on these buildings so that the occupancy can be secured for the current tenants, and hopefully these things can be worked out further down the road. I did hear at least one councilman mention this leapfrogging principle that I think he claimed to have invented it, although I would take strong exception to that. But I think that's the ultimate solution here, is not spending several million dollars on relocation of these people to perhaps non-existent places, but to build a building on the site that is currently scheduled to be demolished, move the people from one of the buildings that is occupied to the new building, and then fix that building or demolish it if it's necessary, and do that sort of a leapfrogging thing where you use your relocation fund to create extra housing instead of displacing people at great inconvenience for them and expense to the government.
What I noticed was that for the first time at city council meetings, the actual issue of were there enough units being proposed came up, and we have been endlessly reassured by city council members, mostly by simply ignoring the issue, but occasionally by contradicting the facts and saying, oh, everyone's going to be able to come back, no problem, there will be adequate units. This was actually the line put forward at the Relocation Advisory Committee by the Michael Biatti, the special city-funded relocation expert from Los Angeles, and by Cecil Cirillo, the head of the Redevelopment Agency, that there's enough units, even though 63 units are being destroyed to make way for 48, and more important perhaps, 70 to 100 families currently living in the units, only 48 of which are now occupied since the Seaside Company has emptied out its units in anticipation, no doubt, of a killing on this property to avoid relocation funding. Of the 48 units that are currently occupied, that they contain approximately 70 to 100 families that are going to be expected to squeeze into 35 new units or 34. Only that's the number of the new 48 that will be include for families of four or more.
Yeah, the rest I believe was for like several single men.
Single men or maybe couples.
Uh-huh.
And so this figure actually got out into the ether. It got out to the public. It got out generally. And perhaps that is the value of these hearings, not that the city council is taking any meaningful action. It delayed things. It avoided guarantees that the tenants wanted, that the tenants asked there be written contractual guarantees specifying that they would get relocated and that they would get back in, regardless of Mercy Charity's criteria of the moment, which initially were completely restrictive. They would have prevented a majority of the people from returning, and after endless protests and letters and pressure, they've changed those criteria. But the significant thing I noticed was that Catherine Byers, she admitted this repeatedly, that she said there's too many families, we can't, but then she claimed, instead of going on from there to really look at the situation and say, what kind of a process do we have that has been claiming all along that we've got a fine situation? And of course, it's her Mercy Charity's housing friends that are doing this, and that's the problem, and she doesn't want to criticize them, or redevelopment agency allies, she doesn't want to criticize them, so she doesn't criticize anybody, and we get to criticize her. But the reality is that she didn't point out that the tenants don't want a community center, and they don't want a child care center particularly, and they don't want to be relocated. And that would save about $6 million right there. So if they're talking about not having enough money to build the additional units, there's the money.
Yeah. Well, that also is reflective of what's wrong with the entire process. Is this is a plan with this, the child care center, and the whole concept is about, I would say, 6 to 8 years old and drawn up by well-intentioned people, on a planning level, but with no community input. Then the theory is then they go to the community, especially the community directly affected, and say, what do you think of this plan? But that's really not what's happened here. They went to the community and said, here's your plan, just like with the beach plan.
Yeah, pack your bags and get ready to go. Here, let's start talking about how we can get you out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I do have to say that I appreciate Catherine raising this issue, because it is definitely a problem and a contradiction, and it's one of the reasons that the residents don't have any trust with this process, is because with the relocation issue and with this inadequate number of replacement unit issues, they became aware of the situation. I don't think that was part of the plan for them really to get to this level of understanding so they could ask these questions. They're just supposed to basically trust the system. And I think there's a certain amount of patronizing going on. These ignorant people that can't even speak English, they're not going to know what the heck is going on. But we'll decide for them what's right. Well, we found that they're very intelligent people, and they can cope with the system, even though they don't even speak the language. Partly because of some help from some of the local activists, and largely because of their own efforts. They've been spending a lot of time meeting. And I think that the whole issue of the number of units is sort of symptomatic of the way this process is done on the calculation level. When this particular housing plan was adopted, and after being compared to four others, there was about a 20-minute discussion at the council, and then all of a sudden the other four plans were dismissed, although the figures used to allegedly analyze and evaluate these various possibilities were all projections based on very little actual hard data, just, educated guess, you might say. And that's the same way that this number of units needed is being established. Well, usually a bunch of these people don't actually end up coming back, so that we figured that probably this would be enough units pretty much. But, I mean, it's all entirely speculative. It might be based on an average, you know, of a long term, or it might be based just on a thumbnail type shot at trying to estimate it. But in either case, it's simply not adequate.
Yeah, let me comment on that, Fred, because I think you've got an important point there. Catherine Byers reportedly was the woman who said, the council person who said at one of the closed, Geiger gets invited, but Bear doesn't, to the the council insider groups. And I, you may hear detect a certain resentment in my voice. I don't like the idea of these constituent groups excluding meaningful dissenting voices, and I think it leads to just this kind of bungling and this kind of really foolish and unnecessary polarization in the community.
But let me just agree with what you're saying, Robert, as far as the exclusion of people. I do think it's unfortunate that some council persons can't be more open to different points of view. Unfortunately, I guess that's just a part of human nature, and so, people with similar ideas might have different approaches to try to influence these people in the same direction. So just to respond to that.
Sure, although, to respond to that response, it is also true that individuals who are supporters of council members like yourselves do have significant power here. And if they, for example, are characterizing people like Phil Baer and Scott Graham as wild cards, ranting madmen, people who can't keep, who are just offensive in their speech, and you haven't said all this, but it tends in that direction, it justifies the existing council's attempt to exclude those individuals from the councils of power, and in so doing, does a disservice to the community, because even though it does become uncomfortable inside those discussions at one time or another, that level of discomfort is certainly preferable to the kind of public discomfort that we're suffering now, and certainly to the kind of discomfort that the tenants would suffer if the original Byers Sugar plan, I have to call it that, because Sugar has voted unanimously for this plan all along except for the last 2 weeks. And so I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that, but I just wanted to kind of...
Well, we're going to have to wait for that response for another time, because... Bathrobe Spears Broadsides has run out of time for this Thursday evening. I want to thank Robert and Steve for a great show.